All right, let's get started. Can everyone hear me? Perfect. I'm really excited to be here. My name is Joseph Angari, and I'm a program manager with the Windows ecosystem team. Today, we're going to talk about Windows Store device apps. Just for some context, this talk is primarily aimed at people who are building devices that connect to Windows. So if you're a hardware manufacturer, you build a peripheral, this talk is for you. If you're a dev house and you build software for companies, a hardware manufacturer could come and knock on your door and say, "We want to build a device app," this talk is also for you. If you're generally interested in devices as well, this is going to be a great talk. If you're an OEM, there is some content in here that relates to the devices that are inside the PC. But really, the best thing for you is to refer to the documentation and the assets that we have for OEMs, and I'd be happy to connect you with those assets after the talk. Just with a show of hands, who here is working for a hardware manufacturer that builds peripheral devices? Great. And who here is building a Windows Store device app now or has built? Perfect. Who here is too shy to raise their hand? OK, so I think you're going to be really excited about what we're going to talk about today. Once we get started. So we enable you to build great device apps. The main thing here is that we've taken a number of really big steps towards enabling you to build a great experience for your consumers. One of the really big things we've done here is focus on the fact that for many of you build hardware and software to deliver one combined experience, one shared experience for a user to consume. It's not just the hardware and the features of the hardware. It's not just the software, but it's the two working together. And so we've done a lot of work to make sure those two things can come together really easily, really effectively. So today, we're going to talk about the device ecosystem at large. We're going to talk about some of the big things that we've done in the platform. We're going to talk about one of the big capabilities that we've added and explain a bit about how that works. I'm going to talk to you about how to deliver the application and the assets. And then I'm going to go through a couple items that are important to think about now or as you begin planning the application that you want to build. So let's talk about devices at large. So the device ecosystem is huge. It's massive. It's projected that there are 2 billion USB devices that are going to be sold next year worldwide, USB-enabled devices. There are over 700 million consumer electronics devices that are going to be sold in the US alone. The average household has 25 consumer electronics devices. That's a lot. And these numbers are just climbing, and they're just going to keep climbing. These devices they're just in such large numbers, and they are everywhere. The diversity of these devices are I could keep listing them for the rest of this talk and probably in the following talks as well. They're everything from your TV, your phone, your e-book reader, your thermostat, your appliances in the home, your car. These devices span a huge spectrum. They fill every single niche. In Windows 8, we've taken a number of really big steps forward with these categories of devices. The first is printing. Printing has been made really, really easy. Now, printing has always been really easy, but we've actually taken a huge step forward with this. It's integrated into the modern UI, and when you print from an application, for a developer to be able to print, it is extremely simple. It's extremely simple for them to add that functionality. The next big thing that we've done is we've enabled people to share experiences. So for example, with Play 2, you can share your personal movies, your pictures on something like a TV. You can play music to a network speaker in the home. We've built that into the platform, made it really easy to use. Previously, it was in Windows Media Player, but now it's actually built into the platform, and you can take advantage of it. Mobile broadband has also been made really easy. So if you're a telco, if you're a mobile operator, you can actually integrate with a PC really effectively, really easily, and provide connectivity for users wherever they may be, which is extremely valuable in this day and age. And then last but not least, webcams. Being able to interact with the analog world visually, you can do this if you're a webcam manufacturer, getting applications to take advantage of your device is extremely simple. Basically, you just plug it in, the application does the rest. And if you want to extend functionality as well, so if you want to build filters and allow for rich effects, you can do that too. These other categories of devices have also been enhanced with Windows 8. So for storage devices, which are, again, something like an e-book reader, your phone sometimes will show up as a storage device. Your camera will show up as a storage device. Building applications for these kinds of devices has been made really, really simple. Windows portable devices, which are typically media devices, so your media player, your music player, maybe your portable video player. Also, phones will fall into this category. Cameras can also fall into this category as well. There's a lot of work that's been done to enable you to take advantage of the media on your devices very effectively and very easily from WinRT. If you have a network-connected device, and more devices are becoming network-connected, and we've done something here that I think is pretty breathtaking, but there's this thing called NCDAS. It stands for Network-Connected Device Automatic Setup. And for certain categories of devices, such as TVs, we will automatically connect to them. So if we find them on the network, we just automatically connect, which is an amazing capability. We'll talk about that a bit more later. As well, if you have custom drivers, if you want to be able to take advantage of special functionality in your device, we allow you to build custom drivers, and we're going to talk about that as well. So just to list a couple possibilities, and people think about devices and device apps potentially as like a wall of switches and configurations. It doesn't have to be that. It's actually much more than that. So on the top of this list is a second screen app. This is something like the Xbox Smart Glass, where you have an experience that is a secondary experience to the content that you're actually viewing on a TV or a set-top box. This is a huge capability, and you can do this as well very easily in Windows 8. Music app for network speakers is a great thing to do. So if you have, for example, you could play jazz in the kitchen, you can play a lullaby in the kids' room so they can go to bed. Thermostat controllers, you can control home automation. So your alarm system, your appliances, and of course the temperature in your house. You can build applications that interact with these devices in the home to make it so that the user doesn't have to walk over to the wall or walk down to the basement. They can just control it from their couch. A baby monitor or security system. So you could be sitting there, for example, with your application, an application in the film mode, you're reading the news, and the Snap View is a webcam app that is, or a baby monitor app that is showing the your kid sleeping in the baby room. A great way to kind of just pass the evening as you're reading news and maybe enjoying a movie. A fitness device is also an example of a kind of device that you can build a device app for. Allows you to monitor your things like your the number of steps that you're taking, how well you're sleeping, the other biometric data that you can get from these devices. A lot of possibilities. And so when you think about what a device app is, it is anything that connects to these rich devices that will enable these new and wonderful experiences that are emerging. So there's one particular capability that we've built, which is, very exciting. I'm personally very excited about it. And that is the way in which applications get deployed on Windows. So previously, the way you would do this is you'd have a CD, and you'd take the CD, and you'd put your CD into the CD tray, or maybe you'd get instructions that would say, go to the web. And then you'd go through a setup process. And the first thing with setup is you'd get this elevation prompt. And it's important because setup is actually a very powerful application. It can do a lot of things. And so this is important to establish trust. But it's also a moment when users can potentially say, I'm not really sure I trust these people. It's not really a safe environment. Or I've been hit by viruses in the past, and so they may choose not to install it. But let's say they continue. The setup wizard pops up. They click next. And often, a lot of users will try and click next as quickly as possible. They just want to get to the end and be done with it. That's when you have things like progress wizards that show you progress that's never really real. At the very end, you click finish. Your application's then is then installed, and it's installed in the start menu or it's installed on the desktop, but it becomes this kind of lifeless tile or lifeless icon that somebody has to kind of then know this thing represents that device over there. It's not bad. It's been the state of the art for a long time. But there are a lot of steps involved. And when you think about the experience, a user goes and buys a device, they come home, and now they go through a fairly lengthy process before they can actually get started. How could we make that better? One of the things that I used to have a side story, I'm going to go off script a bit. I used to have a PC that I was convinced hated me. And the reason was it's the CD tray, or a PC that had the CD tray that I think that hated me, because the auto-retract mechanism, you know, when you push it and it goes back in, it was extremely sensitive, but only with me. And so I put a CD in the CD tray, and I would just barely touch it, and it would retract it and trap my CD. And so this was extremely frustrating. It was also a very strong motor. I hated that PC. It hated me. Maybe that's why it didn't like me. But there's all these potential problems that can occur in this chain of setup. If setup fails, and setup can fail for a large number of reasons, my bad PC aside, one of the weird things I've personally seen, and I used to work for a hardware manufacturer, so I've experienced the other side of this quite a bit. One of the things we've seen is that our setup was actually registered as, there was some component in one of the versions of our setup that was registered by a virus maker as a virus, like it matched a virus that existed in the world. And so we had no idea why setup was failing on these PCs. It took a long time to troubleshoot what was going on. So there's a bunch of things that can happen that prevent setup from actually working. And if the user needs setup to actually work and complete the experience, that's not a good thing. For them, again, they've bought this device. They have a sense of euphoria. They're very excited about the fact that they're going to go and use this device, and now it's not working. And so their opinion of your company probably goes down because they say, well, these guys just don't know how to do their job. That's not a good thing, but it gets worse. The thing they also say is that, well, it's not working, I'm going to call. And that call is expensive. Potentially blows away your margin, and if you have to call multiple times, you know, that's you're eating into other devices as well. And it gets worse. If they can't get it working, even after those calls, they just kind of bundle it all up inside of a bag and they send it back to the store, and that costs even more money. So getting this right is extremely important. And so, having, again, been in a hardware manufacturer, and with the partners that I've worked with who build these kinds of systems, they spend a lot of time here. I've seen whole walls that are covered in the flow to describe exactly what happens in this condition, in that condition, on this kind of thing, on that kind of thing. A lot of complexity here. A lot of engineering time is spent trying to get this right. And there's a lot of tools that you can use to try and do this, but there's often, in a lot of organizations, there'll be like the one guy that's the setup guy. He knows this stuff because there's just a bunch of stuff you just have to know. The thing that we've done here, and I'm really excited about this. I don't know if it's coming across, but I think it's phenomenal. And having been in a hardware manufacturer, it just blows me away, is this. For Windows 8, you plug in the device, the application that you have submitted for that device that's in the App Store is automatically downloaded. And then the driver is automatically downloaded, if you have one. That's huge. That complex setup flow that you had that covers walls, we had a spec that was 128 pages, dense pages of content that described exactly what happened in all these different conditions, just because of the fact that we didn't want that call that said, this didn't work. It's expensive to get that. So we had a lot of complexity to make sure that that never happened. And it still happens, because you just can't control the wide and complex universe. So I'm going to do this again, just to illustrate this point, because it's super, super important. You plug in your device. You have a wired device. You plug it in. The application shows up in the start menu. The application is automatically downloaded. And the driver again shows up. Now, if you recall, I talked about having for the network-connected devices, there's this thing called automatic setup. We automatically connect to these network devices. So think about what's possible here. You have I want to caveat and say it doesn't apply to all network-connected devices. Certain categories, and the categories are really the ones that are shared devices. So if it's something like a TV, if it's potentially an appliance, these are all shared devices in a home. Those we'll automatically connect to. Your personal phone that connects to the network, we won't automatically connect to other people's PCs in the home because it doesn't seem appropriate. It's more of a private device. But if you have a public device, say a TV or a set-top box, you come home with your TV, you connect it in the home, you connect it to your access point or to the home network. Windows will automatically connect to that device. And then, because this first step, plug-in is already done, we automatically download the app. So from a user experience perspective, the user perspective of this is that they unpackage everything, they get it connected, they go to their PC, and the app is there. That's a magical experience. If I didn't know how this worked, I would think that was magic. And these are the kinds of things. Magic in this context is defined as you look at this app up here, and you wouldn't recall doing the work to make that happen. So in the past, you've done a bunch of work to make all these things happen, but in this case, it just kind of happened, and you have no idea how it happened. Maybe it's my very evil PC that likes to eat my CDs. I'd be suspicious of that, but it still creates this magical experience, and I think it's very, very powerful. So this is a huge, huge step forward. It's just a huge, huge step forward for device manufacturers with Windows. So let's talk about how this works. I'm going to give you the big picture of the mechanisms that we've built. The first thing is really to talk about the components. Obviously, the first one is your device, and your device is whatever it may be, wired, wireless, the network device that we talked about. There's this thing called metadata. And who here has knows about metadata? Certainly all the people who are building device apps already know that. But with a show of hands, is there anyone who's not building a device app and knows about what metadata is? Who here has built metadata for Windows 7? Oh, perfect. So for those of you that have built metadata for Windows 7, this is going to be very, very straightforward for you. You've done 99% of the work. Just a couple more things, and you get this new capability. And then, of course, there's the app. And this is just a Windows Store app, not just a Windows Store app. It is an awesome Windows Store app, and it can take advantage of all the capabilities in Windows. So you can use things like live tiles. You can use things like the contracts. It's a great capability. It's a great thing that it's just a Windows Store app. And then, of course, there's the driver, if you have a driver. And we're going to talk about that and how that fits into the puzzle a little bit later. So the sequence is this. Your device arrives. The metadata is downloaded. And then the app is downloaded. So very, very straightforward. Not a lot of components. When you think about all the work that goes into building the system, it's much less than all the work and all the complexity that you have to think about when you're building a traditional setup process for, say, Windows 7 or even other platforms. If you have a driver, the same sequence again. You plug in your device. The metadata and the driver are downloaded. And then the app is downloaded. I'm putting my finger over the clicker. That's the problem. If you see me doing that and wondering why it's not working, just say finger, and I'll move my finger. So how does it work? The first thing you want to do is you want to connect. You want to give your device an identification. So typically, this will be a VID and a PID, a vendor ID and a product ID. So you get this ID, and you put it in your device so that when your device connects to Windows, we get this PNP ID, this plug-and-play ID. This allows us to identify your device. And an important thing to do here is to make sure that you don't use the same IDs across a whole range of devices that potentially have different experiences. So if you're a manufacturer and you have devices that share a common base hardware infrastructure, then whenever you rev based on family type or class type, change the VID and the PID so you can get unique experiences and target appropriately. Otherwise, we won't be able to specifically give you the application that is appropriate for that device. At the same time, you add this ID to the metadata. And just to explain metadata, for those of you who don't know what this is, it's just a small collection of XML files. It sounds scary because meta is always like this really abstract thing. It just basically means it's just a small series of XML files that contain data about that you add data to about your device so that Windows understands a few more things about it. So for example, it will contain an icon, a photorealistic icon of your device so that you can actually, when you plug in your device, see something that is the actual representation of your device. So that's just what metadata is. Now, the next thing you do is you bind your metadata to your application. This is important. There's this thing called an experience ID. And if you've built device stage experiences in the past, then you'll know what this is. We're using the same mechanism, but you add the experience ID to the app package, to the store manifest in the app package. You take the application info, there are a couple details about the application, you add that to the metadata. Those two are now bound. Very important step, but it's just that simple. So here's a kind of a representation of the whole thing. You have metadata in the center. It references the hardware. It contains references to the hardware via the hardware ID, contains references to the application via the application info, and the application info and the app and the metadata contain this experience ID that binds them together. So just to revisit the sequence, you plug in your device. We get the hardware ID out of your device. We go and look for metadata that matches the hardware ID. We then download that metadata. The driver is also downloaded as well, if you have a driver. We unpack the metadata. We look for the application that metadata refers to. We reference the store, and we download it automatically. It's just that simple. So from all the complexity of building traditional setup processes, all the complex flow, it really just comes down now to this very, very simple file. You build it, you connect it to your hardware, connect it to your app, submit it, and you're done. So a little bit about the metadata. I'm going to show you a really, really quick demo here. And the point here is just to show you that it's real. So here we have Visual Studio. You need to have Visual Studio Pro or Ultimate, and you need to have the Windows driver kit installed. But you get this thing called device metadata, and you can start authoring it very, very easily. And to the people who've built it in the past, if you have your Windows 7 metadata, you can actually load your Windows 7 metadata and just build upon it. And so here, let's create a new one. We're not going to go through the whole thing. But you define your package in your languages. You add the photorealistic icon of your device, give it a description, choose the category that's appropriate for the device, and then you associate it with your hardware IDs. So if your device has a number of hardware IDs, or if you have a number of different devices that are supported by one application, you add those hardware IDs in here. You define your application. You put the application information in here. And then we'll talk about privileged applications for people that have drivers. This will be a relevant thing for you to look at. And then at the very end, when you're done, you'll get an experience ID generated by this wizard automatically. And so if I switch back to let me close this out. Let me try and close it out. Oh, that's actually my slide. I thought that was Visual Studio, and I was trying to move it over. It fooled me. You can see here an example of how you'd fill in the application tab. And then at the very end, you get the experience ID. It's just a GUID. This is just the thing that you add inside of a store manifest. It's already in the metadata package. When you click Finish, that metadata package is created for you. And then you add it to the application, and it's done. So I'm going through this, by the way, at a fairly high level. We had a workshop on building device applications a couple months back. The videos and the slides are all online. At the end of this, I'm going to have a reference to that. I encourage you to go there. We've got much deeper talks in specific categories of devices and how to build these experiences. The metadata package you create with this tool will also work on Windows 7. Again, like I said, you're 99% of the way there if you've built metadata already, so really, really simple to add this capability. One of the new things we've added is we can actually put in multiple languages inside one package, so that's a really great time saver for people who are deploying on Windows 8. A little bit about the driver. So we talked about you saw the privileged API, privileged app in the metadata screen that we just looked at. We've built the infrastructure to make it so that you get exclusive access to your device. So the interface from your driver is considered restricted, and so you have to have a privileged app. You have to mark your app as privileged to access that driver. So only you get to talk to your driver. Nobody else gets to talk to your driver, which is good when you want to be able to ensure that you have exclusive access. Now, a key thing, if you have a driver, you don't want to have your driver interact with the rest of the system. It is against policy to change properties of the system. You should interact with your application, with your device, and only your device. So how do you deliver this app? We'll cover this actually. I think I'll just go to the next slide and tell you how that works. The first thing you do is you certify your device. Who here is familiar with SysDev, formerly WinQual? Perfect. You need to have your device certified by a series of certification tests that we use to ensure that the devices will work and work well with Windows. The mechanism will not work if your device is not certified. It must be certified. You submit this to SysDev. You submit your application. Your application will get checked against a couple things, and I'll talk about this in a bit. And then you submit your metadata. When you submit your metadata, there is a check done against SysDev to make sure that, in fact, the device being referenced exists and is certified. And then and then a check is also done to make sure that the app exists and the app shares the experience ID. And so this is basically to make sure that these two were forged together and you're not trying to automatically download somebody else's application. After all this is done, the metadata is then submitted, and now the whole system works. Simple, right? If you've built setup in the past, that's super, super complicated. This is simple. One file binds all of this stuff together, and it just works. You plug it in, they come down one right after the other, and the application's installed. So the application goes to the Windows Store, just like every other application. The metadata and the driver go to SysDev. If you've submitted in the past, we've made a couple changes. The interface is a lot simpler, a lot easier to use, but the same great functionality. You can submit your drivers with the logs, submit the metadata, and it all just works. A couple important points about submitting the application. We will not expect you to send your hardware in so that we can test your scenario. So there are a couple things you need to do to make sure that your application gets through the store. You are still responsible for making sure that your application fulfills all the store certification requirements. And if it is discovered that your application does not fulfill those requirements with the hardware connected, your application will be pulled. But we cannot test that all those scenarios are in fact compliant. And so these are important steps for you to make sure you do to make sure that the application will get in. One, in the note to testers, you want to add that this is a Windows Store device app. So let the people who are going through the certification know what to expect. Really important step. The next thing is the description in the App Store should state that the application requires specific hardware. The idea here is that we don't want people downloading applications thinking they're going to have a wonderful experience, and then after they've downloaded it, learn that they actually need to have a specific piece of hardware. So you need to be really clear about the fact that you need hardware. You need to be clear about the hardware that you need as well. The store will make sure that your store manifest exists and there's an experience ID in it. This is a critical step. This is the key check that they use. Make sure that your store that the app package has a store manifest. When the application launches, if you have a great experience, and I encourage you to do this, this is a great opportunity for you to tell users about your hardware, about your company, where to buy the hardware. This is a good thing to try out, to offer the consumers who download the app just for discovery. But at a minimum, you must say that you need them to connect a specific device, your specific device. So you don't want if you provide a message that says, you know, error 319B, that's not going to pass certification. Or if you have a blank screen, or if you crash, you know, those are all bad things. Just need to be really clear about the fact that you need the consumer to connect a very specific device. A little bit about updating. The automatic mechanism is obviously an amazing step forward. And we've made a couple of assumptions on behalf of the user. We think that by plugging in, they want the application. But from then on, we give it to the user. The user's in control. That's one of the philosophies we've had with Windows 8. And so they get to choose how things get updated. So if you want to update your app, then you update your app through the App Store. The user will have to, you basically submit to the App Store. They will get an increment in the number on the store that says there are a number of apps that are pending, and they can go and download it there. If you have a driver, the driver is submitted through Windows Update. Users will need to go to the Windows Update app, to the Settings app in the Windows Update tab, to get the latest drivers. We're not going to deploy those automatically. The metadata is deployed automatically, but it no longer has the automatic trigger. So if you have a couple changes in descriptions and stuff like that, those will get sent out on a bit of a different frequency, but that's generally the way the system works. So an important thing to do here is if you do need a driver, it is possible that the version of your app and the version of your driver will be different. And so you need to build in redundancy so that, and enough intelligence in your system so that you at least can say whether or not you will work with the current version, and if you don't, provide instruction for the user to go and download it from the appropriate place, so go to the Windows Update app and download it. Things to think about. Kind of a collection of important topics that will help you as you go through this process. First one is reimagine your app. This applies across the full spectrum of people who build applications for the desktop. But Windows 8 is very different. You've been here for a couple days. You've seen how different it is. The app model's different. Just porting it over may not even work. Certainly from an experience perspective, there are new capabilities that are designed for you to take advantage of in Windows that were not present previously. Consider, it's important to take advantage and think very broadly about all the new capabilities and assets to help you build the best application that you can. If you just port, it's probably not going to do that. It's probably not going to be the best application you could build. So reimagine it. This is an important point. Not that any of the other points weren't important. This one is especially important, I think, for some of the people that think about the application and the application experience. This is your company at the end of the day. It represents your company. So it's an opportunity not only to provide value or connect to the device and provide value that way for the user, but it's a way to bring the consumer to you. So this is a big opportunity. Live Tiles, for example, something not possible previously. The mechanism of inviting a user into your application is now very easy for you to take advantage of. And while we don't want to have your application just be an advertising surface, and I'll cover that in a little bit later, it's an opportunity to invite them to learn about newer models of your device, accessories for your device, other things like that. This is a really, really big opportunity. And the way you do this is really important. If you badger them and give them false promises or deals that really aren't deals, for example, they can turn off Tiles. They're in control. They can turn off your notifications. They can do all those kinds of things. So it's important for you to be genuine and providing good value for your consumers. And they'll just keep coming back for more. Participate fully in Windows 8. This touches on a number of things we've already talked about. The share contract is I think a huge, huge opportunity for a lot of hardware manufacturers. And one scenario that really resonates for me, and certainly having been in a hardware manufacturer, I think this is a really great capability, is if you have a piece of data that the user participates in getting, in generating with your device, like a fitness device, say, you take, say, they've climbed Mount Everest, they did a mile in 7 minutes, something, a new achievement for them. They've done 10,000 steps in a week, whatever it may be. Those are great things for you to be able to share, for you to let them share with their, say, social network with their friends. And using Share Contract, in that share message, you can embed details about your company in the product. Joseph just ran a marathon. That's kind of a joke. I wish I could, but I cannot. But I would share this with my friends. I will aspire to this, and I will share it with my friends on that day. And the when they see it on Facebook, they will see Joseph did this wonderful thing. This was collected on this device. Here's a link. You can go purchase it as well. That's a huge, huge capability. So think about what it is that you can get from your customers that they want to share. And that's an opportunity for you to get word of mouth advertising. It's an opportunity for you to take advantage of their social network. And this is all positive, right? This is something that I'd want to be able to share and show off that I, in fact, had this great device that enabled me to collect this information. The 1+1=3 really, I think for me, speaks to this idea that applications can interact without ever having known each other. And so currently, if you want to build in work with, if you want to be able to interact with social networks, for example, then you have a list and you interact with Facebook and Twitter and all these things, and you do all that work yourself. With Windows 8, you don't have to do that work. And maybe you think about a particular context and you're thinking about one social network or one particular target, but a new one pops up later, or worldwide, there's different ones that are more popular in different regions. That just happens automatically. You've probably heard this already, that share contracts are really important, but this is a really, really great capability for you to be building in. So again, we talked about not porting and just kind of bringing your application over wholesale. This is one of those things that you want to make sure you take advantage of. And if you just do a straight port and you say, well, these are the two things we do and this is what we're going to do on this app, you're not going to be getting the full advantage of Windows 8. The app is an app, and it is discoverable in the store by anybody. So we talked about putting it in the description so people understand the hardware is required. But it's possible for them to download this app just to explore. What could this thing do? We talked about this earlier. Give them a good experience. It's an opportunity for you to put your best foot forward, offer them the ability to learn about your hardware, what it can do, how it can make their lives better, and allow them to purchase. So this is potentially a purchasing model that is not possible currently. And we don't take any percentage of that. If you have a store inside of your application, you make sales, that's yours. This goes without saying, the application must have some value. It cannot, again, simply be an advertising surface. Review the store certifications on this. It is, again, still an application. So if you just have something that is a series of links to things to purchase that are completely unrelated, the app will be rejected. Because of the fact that we download the app automatically, the app must be free. We're not going to auto-bill people. That would obviously not be a good thing. So the application must be free. That does not mean that you cannot, again, to my previous point, you cannot have a in-app purchase model. People can buy things. They can, if they want to subscribe to additional services that your company offers, you can do that as well. Again, if you want to buy new models, buy accessories, a great place to do this. We talked about this before, really, really important. The key message here is start doing this now. Make sure you understand how to certify your device. Start learning about it. It's a great process, but it's important that you start early so that you understand the way it works, especially if it requires changes to hardware based on the fact that some tests may fail, maybe make some changes to the firmware. Get that started early. It's not something you save to the very end. The driver model works on x86 and x64 just like it always has. And so if you want to build your driver like you've always done, you can continue to do that. To distribute your driver on ARM, you're going to want to work with the OEMs who build those systems. So just to review, Windows 8 enables you to build great device applications, take advantage of the automatic deployment, enables you to have that seamless connected experience. You plug in your device, and it's automatically downloaded. You can get into delivering the value that the user purchased your device for, and then reimagine your application. If you have a couple of questions, I'm actually really happy to take them. But we actually have a Ask the Experts session at 12 o'clock in this same room. We're going to have a bunch of chairs set up, and we're going to have a bunch of people who helped build all of this here to answer all of your questions. So I'd be happy to take some questions now, but we can also defer some of them to the next session. Yes, please.
You just mentioned something about the ARM, and if we have a driver for our USB device, the only way for that to work on an ARM tablet is to work with the OEM, the private tablet. Is that what you said?
Yeah, so the question is really about the slide. The way in which you deploy your driver is as you, you normally would with x86 and x64, but if you want to work, if you want to deploy it on ARM, you work with the OEMs to do that.
Does Microsoft have some guidelines for us to get drivers onto the Surface RT?
So we can take this offline. If you want to connect with OEMs, we're happy to make the appropriate introductions and help you work with them to deliver the drivers that you need to deliver. Yes?
Does this only apply if you connect over USB, or could you connect over, say, wireless or something?
Great question. It's does this connect if you connect over USB, or does it also work if you connect wirelessly, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, or over, say, over the network? It works with anything that generates a PNP event. So if it's wired, USB, Bluetooth, UPnP, these all generate PNP events. The system is based on PNP, and so all those will work. Yes?
What happens with devices that are not hardware? So my company would build a driver that exposes the file system, and other people do need to filter drivers.
Yeah. So the question is, what do you do if you need to deploy drivers that are not related to custom hardware, but are related to like a file system driver, filter driver on the system? The best recommendation is that you continue to provide the value you provide on the desktop. We have a policy against having Windows Store applications being able to change system settings. This comes very close to, it seems like you're changing potentially system settings and allowing capabilities that would affect other Windows Store apps. You've probably heard this a lot before, but the thing that enables Windows, this new environment, to be successful is trust from the user. And trust from the user allows them to try things with less trepidation than they would otherwise. So they're more likely to install your application because they have greater confidence that it's not going to change the system in any significant way and either make them lose data or get viruses and stuff like that. So. We don't want applications being able to change the system in a fundamental way. It sounds like the value you provide is probably more applicable on the desktop, and we're happy for you to enable to continue to provide that functionality there. If somebody wants to download the application to the desktop and install it, then that's a fantastic thing for them to do, and they know what they're getting into, and that's a great thing for them. Yes. I'm not an expert in that area, but I'd be happy to connect you with the experts in that area. Maybe at the Chalk Talk that's later today, we can go through that specific topic. Yes?
Speaking about the drivers and hooking up the OEMs or ARM devices, does the store or the metadata provide some ways to exclude certain devices or certain user of certain devices from getting my app offered if I don't have the driver for that particular hardware?
The question is there a way for you to exclude offering the automatic deployment for hardware where you don't have a driver?
Yep.
So if you're it's a good question, and I think probably the best answer is that come back at 12 o'clock and we'll ask some of the experts there. Certainly you can differentiate against, you would not obviously, you could not, and so would not submit a driver for ARM, and so that would automatically preclude that from working there. Yes, in the back. Sorry, could you speak up?
What is the mechanism? What is the API that an application uses to connect to a driver?
Device I/O control is I believe still present, and it's a great question for the next session. You create the device instance. The main thing there is that the driver has to have an interface that is restricted, and then you get to talk to your device like you normally do. Yes. The question is, how do you, if you deploy the, if you work with an OEM, does that, to deploy your driver, does it need to be part of the OEM package that the OEM deploys? I believe the answer is yes, but I'm not an expert in that area.
The answer is yes.
So says an audience member that I do not know. Yes?
When you're developing a device, you usually have like a lot of teams of people working on different things, firmware, hardware, drivers, applications, and usually some other stuff. And they're all working on different timelines and schedules and, you know, hoping everything comes together. How do you test any of this stuff?
The question is, you've got a lot of people working potentially in different parts of the world and different components. How do you test all of this? For the metadata, you can deploy the metadata locally on your machine. You use a particular command line switch to enable us to not require the signing that was that we talked about previously from SysTef. And then you can do all the testing you need to do locally. And so you would deploy an app package, you deploy the metadata, and then for people who have the devices, they just simply plug it in and everything would be able to work. It's a great question. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd be happy to take it offline and go into more detail about how you do that. Yeah. In the back? The question is, after the application gets downloaded, does it auto-launch? Or does it just get added to the start screen? There is an auto-launch mechanism for one category of devices, which is the devices that use storage. And this uses the autoplay mechanism that currently exists. And so if you plug in a storage device, the autoplay UI takes over. You can add to that the option to trigger the download of your application as well. You will see a progress bar that has the application downloading. And then when it's downloaded, because of the fact that the user clicked it as the default option, it will auto-launch. And then because it is autoplay, the next time you plug in that device, that application will auto-launch as well. Yes?
So going back to the custom driver thing, does this apply to truly custom drivers? Or if I have like a camera device that works pretty much the same across all, can I write using the class driver framework and be OK across the device? Or do I still have to work with an OEM on ARM?
If you're deploying a driver, then you need to be working with an OEM. So if it's a custom driver that you develop independently, you need to be working with an OEM. The question was whether or not you are, whether if you're using a existing class driver, whether or not you need to have any specific things that are not available on ARM. But if it's anything new, then you need, like you're adding to it in any particular way, you need to work with the OEM to do that. For the webcam scenario specifically, as I showed previously, we've done a lot of work to make webcam access really, really easy. And so I'd be interested to find out what it is that you want to do that's additional, that is on top of the capabilities that we already have. But in general, you should be able to just plug it in, and users should be able, an app vendor should be able to take advantage of the webcam very, very easily. Yes?
So you're able to deploy an application before the Windows 8 app. Is it possible to automatically launch a desktop application?
Sorry, I need you to repeat the question. Can you, if you have, so not with any of these mechanisms, certainly. On the desktop, if you have your own custom software running on the desktop, then you can get device notifications and you can launch whatever you want to be able to launch. This mechanism is primarily focused on deploying and handling Windows Store apps. Yes.
So you mentioned earlier live tiles.
Yes.
Is there a way to actually trigger a notification to a live tile from the hardware itself?
At the moment, for most device classes, that mechanism is not in place. But I'd love to get feedback from you if you have a specific scenario. I'd love to take it offline. Yeah. Any other questions? Absolutely. So you can interact with multiple drivers. Again, the restriction there is really just that the interface is restricted. the distribution of those drivers is handled as it was in the past. So you submit those to SysDev and they come down. And then for the metadata to deploy in the metadata that would connect to the application, you would list the hardware IDs for those devices. You would mark up a couple other things to enable you to get access to those particular custom interfaces, and then it'll all work.
They said restricted interface. What do you mean by
restricted interface?
Uh-huh.
So on your driver, you have an interface. You need to mark it as restricted. You can do this either in code or via the inf. And that's when Windows is able to then offer access to a Windows Store app. So we don't allow kind of just generic access to the driver interfaces. OK, so just a couple more things. If you want to have if there are more questions, if you think about a couple of the things we've talked about here and you're getting maybe something to drink and you have another hard question, 12 o'clock, we've got a great session, a lot of good experts who are going to be coming in and handling a lot of the interesting, nuanced questions that you want to be able to ask. There's also, again, the Windows Store device app workshop that took place a couple months ago. I encourage you to go to that website. The link is in the deck here. A lot of great talks. A lot of this stuff that I've covered is in that, but then we go into much more detail into like the specific device categories and how you build against them. And then there's a wonderful document on the device app lifecycle that's on MSDN. Great document to read through. And Build 2011 also had really great talks. I encourage you. This link actually is a filter of some of those talks that I think are really important. And there's a wonderful place on MSDN that talks about the different categories of devices and how you work with those as well. Thank you all, and I hope to see you at 12.